Hi, thank you for listening to Mad Scientists Exposed. Today, it seems the most relevant topic we can talk about in light of the horrible incidents in Orlando and now in Texas. I thought I'd talk about pre-crime. Pre-crime is something I'd never heard of before I saw a particular movie. What was the name of it? They use psychics suspended in sensory deprivation pools that would plug into their computer, and they could predict who was going to commit murder at what time, and they would send out SWAT teams essentially to go stop the crime just before it happens. And this happened repeatedly throughout the movie, and they would arrest people who never committed a crime, and it didn't matter, it wasn't part of the Constitution. You can't arrest people who don't commit crimes, and they would do that. So anyway, if you care to take a look at some of the articles I've got lined up at madscientist.exposed, I've got several articles from thebigthink.com and one from the Washington Post. That's the Big Think articles. Two of them are from over a year ago. They were not kind enough to give me the date, but they related it to that movie. And then the Washington Post in December, the age of pre-crime has arrived. Then there was an article in March, Ars Technica, China is building a big data platform for pre-crime. And then there's some other current things now where apparently there was information that the FBI had that could have fingered this guy as planning the crime in Atlanta, in Orlando. And now they know they've got his wife, who knew what he was up to, and she tried to talk him out of it, but she didn't turn him in, and so now she's facing her own criminal problems. So anyway, over at the Big Think, this article is let me pull it up here. There it is. The pre-crime detection system now being tested in the U.S. And this article is over a year ago, and they've got a scene from that movie pictured. Oh, that's right. It was a Tom Cruise movie. It says, the Future Attribute Screening Technology Project, FAST, was not dreamed up by author Philip K. Dick, but it could have been. Led by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the initiative aims to use sensor technology to detect cues, quote, indicative of malintent, unquote, defined by the Department of Homeland Security as intent or desire to cause real harm, quote, rapidly, reliably, and remotely. It would be used, they say, to fight terror. Of course, not calling it terror itself, where you're arresting people who haven't committed a crime, I don't know. I'm a little bit uneasy with this technology. Anyway, the FAST system has the capability to monitor physiological and behavioral cues without contact. That means capturing data like the heart rate and steadiness of gaze of passengers about to board a plane. The cues, I mean, why don't we just get bomb sniffing dogs, ammunition sniffing dogs, you know? Anyway, the cues are then run through algorithms in real time to compute the probability that an individual is planning to commit a crime. Well, suppose that's a blind person with an unusual blink rate, you know? Anyway, I'm picking on it. According to the science journal Nature, the first round of field tests for the program was completed in an undisclosed location in the Northeast several months ago. In lab tests, the FAST has reported a 70% accuracy rate. How do they know that? How do they know that? Do they stop people and ask them, after they've evaluated them, what is your intent in being here? Wow, I'd like to know how they measured that percentage. Being as that may sound, there is at least one clear improvement on the system we have now. The sensors are, quote-unquote, culturally neutral, says the DHS, which may help eliminate the racial profiling, which is allegedly allowed by the TSA screening process in American airports today. Well, yeah, there's some cultures where, as you're passing people walking by them, they won't look you in the eye. Or there's some that will stare you down, depending on their cultural background or maybe their intent. Some people will actually acknowledge you and say, hi, how are you? And some people won't. And some people just don't speak English. So anyway, it goes on. It is encouraging to see an effort to develop a real empirical base for new technologies before any policy commitments are made. Tom Ormerod, a psychologist in the investigative expertise unit at Lancaster University, told Nature. For a nuanced discussion of the initiative on the intuitive nature of crime and punishment, watch our interview with Sam Gosling, and they have a link, a professor of psychology at University of Texas, Austin, who argues that investigators solve crimes by developing sensitivity to the quote-unquote residue of our acts that we leave inadvertently on our space. Well, if you have, how do you leave a residue if you haven't actually committed it yet? So they don't talk a whole lot about it. They provide links to their sources to gain an understanding of this. I guess it's all about body language. Wow. I followed the link, and it was a link to the DHS.gov website, and it says, access denied. You are not authorized to view the web page you are attempting to load. To help you find what you're looking for, blah, 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 search. Wow. So let's see. This one goes to thehill.com. Allegedly allowed by the TSA screening process link. Let's see if this one is still there. Or did DHS make them take it down? Loading. Let's see. Damn, TSA behavior detecting program allows quote-unquote racial profiling. The Transportation Security Administration's behavior detection program allows for racial profiling at airport security, a key Democrat on the House Homeland Security Committee is alleging. Well, he's alleging like it's not right. Well, you know, there does tend to be some cultures that are more prone to violence than others. There are also some mental illnesses that are prone to more violence than others. Representative Benny Thompson of Democrat of Mississippi. Oh, this article is 5 years old, 4.5 years old. The ranking Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee wrote a letter to TSA Administrator John Pistoli, he's long gone, after reports that Mexican passengers were targeted by TSA at airports in Honolulu, Hawaii, and Newark. Well, it goes on, so they don't like the racial profiling, so they had to take that out. So now it's all based on behavior and whether you're making eye contact and all that. So there are more articles here. Also by BigThink.com over a year ago. Let's see what that one has to say. This is called Pre-Crime and Punishment. And there's a guy waving handcuffs in your face. One of the most striking facts about the recent Oslo massacre, this is actually probably several years ago, and bombing by extremist 32-year-old Norwegian was the sheer amount of premeditation that went into the grisly act. The photo of Anders Breivik posing in a wetsuit with a high-powered rifle went hand-in-hand with the 1,500-page manifesto called 2083, a European Declaration of Independence. Both of these were posted online soon before the tragic events. And they've got a link, and it's a Wall Street Journal link. I wonder if it'll let me in. Breivik, too, was known to have espoused virulently nationalistic views. Oh, here we go. We're going to badmouth nationalism. You know, there's nationalism, which is supremacist, and there's nationalism that's not supremacist. And I hope people will make that distinction when they're watching the political campaigns this season. People like to call Donald Trump a racist, and I've never heard anything racist or supremacist out of his mouth. What I have seen supremacist was I was at a Trump rally in Tucson, and we had a lot of La Raza people yelling Black Lives Matter slogan. They didn't care as long as they were supreme over everybody else in the auditorium. They were quite obnoxious, and their cars were painted up as we were exiting with La Raza supremacist slogans. And even though we were in Spanish, we could get the gist of them. So there's a huge difference between nationalism and supremacy. And I hope everybody understands that. Anyway, it goes on. Breivik, too, was known to have espoused virulently nationalistic views, and that provides a link to another Wall Street Journal article. Was there ever a better candidate for pre-crime detection than the deranged Norwegian Anders Behring Breivik? If I remember right, he killed like 70-something teenagers that were just at a summer camp, and he shot from across the water and took a bunch of them out. There is somehow an unsettling notion that all of these senseless deaths could have been prevented had all the facts been considered ahead of time. Minority Report, the whole notion of pre-crime detection, of course, Minority Report, that's the name of the movie. That's the name of the Tom Cruise movie where they have these psychics suspended in sensory deprivation pools so that all they can focus on are the murders that are going to happen. And, you know, there are such psychics out there. One of my mom's favorite TV shows is Psychic Detective. And, you know, these are after murders have been committed, but she's the various psychic detectives that work with police departments, some of them are really quite good. And, you know, they just point in the direction, and then the police gather the evidence from there. So they actually don't need the psychic's testimony to convict somebody in court. They've got the evidence, but she helps, or he or she helps steer the police towards the evidence. And, you know, I used to be a big fan of the Patricia Arquette show. It was The Medium. And that was based on a woman that worked with the Maricopa County Police or Sheriff's Department here, you know, finding culprits, you know, murder criminals. But that show took a turn for the worse. They started writing the script so that the bad guy was winning more often than the good guys. And I kind of, about a year and a half before that show ended, I stopped watching it. And then probably a lot of people did. Anyway, that's, you know, so there is precedent for this thing. There really are working psychics, working with police departments. They're not preventing crimes yet, but at least not professionally, but they are, you know, helping find people after they've committed the crimes. And, you know, I do have some family members that actually have been uncomfortably premonition of murders that later happened in their city. They would drive past the building, get a really creepy feeling about it. So, oh my God, something's going to happen here. And then within a couple of weeks, something horrible did. Now, there's no way that you can go to a police department with that kind of information and say, you know, this something terrible is going to happen there. You know, nobody knows what to do to stop it because you don't have names, you don't have faces. You can just, you know. I know there's the old story of Elizabeth Taylor who once, she saved her own life. Her first husband, it wasn't Nicky Hilton, her second husband, got on a plane and she had such a bad feeling she couldn't get on the plane with him and he was killed and she wasn't. And that kind of story happens, you know, and it wasn't her time and she just got the feeling. So that's kind of that's an accident, that's not a crime, but it's still, there are people who can do this kind of thing. And so that's what they based this movie on. But then they like wired their brains to computers. So they, you know, and they could read out and find these people that were going to commit the crimes. And anyway, the article goes on, the Big Think article goes on. The whole notion of pre-crime detection, of course, can be traced back to Philip K. Dick's 1956 science fiction story, The Minority Report. Well, I think he gave it a name. He gave it a name, but there are people who, with this ability, even if they can't focus it enough to actually get the guy, you know, unless you know somebody that's planning something, like apparently now we know this killer's wife knew. She actually drove him to scope out the gay club, the Pulse Gay Club, and she tried to talk him out of it, but she never called the police. You know, he's planning this thing. In the movie version of the novel, Tom Cruise plays an unfairly accused member of a pre-crime detection unit, which is technologically capable of spotting crimes before they even occur. As a result, the incidence of violent crimes falls to zero. All of this takes place, other than the arresting people who haven't committed crimes, I should say, all of this takes place in a fictional Washington, D.C. in the year 2054. What was once the sole domain of science fiction, however, is now blending over into the realm of science fact. There are indeed technologically sophisticated ways that law enforcement agencies in cities such as Washington, D.C. are attempting to predict the occurrence of future crimes. Well, you know, there is the precedent. You know, if somebody beats his wife once, he's likely going to beat her again. So that, you know, there is that. But if somebody's never committed a crime before, this has spiritual implications that I'm not comfortable with, you know, civil rights implications that I'm not comfortable with. Anyway, earlier this year, the British authorities made headlines for rounding up potential activists ahead of the royal wedding in a series of moves that were described by some as pre-crime detection. When was the last? Oh, I guess it was the Prince's royal wedding. I'm thinking back to Charles and Diana. And as ABC News reported last summer, there are already law enforcement authorities along the East Coast who have the ability to predict, statistically, of course, the occurrence of a particular crime by a specific individual. That how do they possibly get a handle on those statistics? I, you know, this is why my slogan, of course we believe in science. Of course we trust science. It's scientists we don't trust. How do they get a handle on that? I would love to find out how they get a handle on that. Crime and punishment, the whole notion of pre-crime, though, brings into sharp focus the basic tenets of democratic society. Are we really willing to exchange notions of presumed innocent for statistically probable to be innocent, or even worse, statistically probable to be guilty? No, I'm not comfortable with it. At a time when algorithms and predictive intelligence are able to hazard a guess about our future shopping patterns and the types of people that we would like to meet online, are they really powerful enough to predict who is likely to commit a crime? Well, it goes on. Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment, you know. Anyway, the article goes on. I have the link on my site. But some of this, you know, we don't need this when we have people who know stuff. I mean, they call them lone wolves, but they're not. I mean, somebody in their circle knows what they're up to. You know, they know what they're up to. And, you know, we have the NSA sucking up all our emails. We have our social media watching all our links and everything we say. Of course, they can filter that stuff and find it. You know, I'm just really not quite comfortable with all of it. Anyway, if you want to join the conversation, the phone number is 347-324-3704. 347-324-3704. And if you'd like, you can call that number if you just want to listen in. You can listen in right at freedomizerradio.com. You can listen in. And madscientist.expose, you can listen in. And if you want to speak, you dial in the number and then hit the one. And that will get you in. So actually, we have caller already. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. This is Ed August calling, and I am a professional astrologer. I've been an astrologer for, you know, I was thinking about it, it's close to 50 years that I've been doing some astrology. And this case today with Omar Mateer, I guess his name is, really upset me.
Yeah.
So as soon as I was able to get his birth date, I did a chart, I guess the chart for this guy. This is the kind of person who probably should have been watched very carefully by someone on some level, but, you know, society is not geared to doing that. The scientists don't believe in it. The education system doesn't believe in it. Religion doesn't believe in it. A lot of people believe in it because they know it works, you know, and astrology could be used to help society. I think there is such a thing as forensic astrology. At least it's possible. So anyway, I did this guy's chart, and, you know, it's so ironic that you mentioned Fyodor Dostoevsky, who wrote Crime and Punishment, you know, because
it was just
one
that
of the
article
aspects,
I was giving to you, but I was boring people at that point.
No, don't bore people. No. The reason I bring it up is that this man, Mateer, was born November 16th of 1986. We don't know exactly what time of day, so it's an approximate chart. But no matter what time of day he was born, he had the sun in a very tight square with Mars. And a square is a negative aspect. It's a harsh aspect. Mars is the planet of anger, of war. You know, the red planet Mars, you know, as it's been known for thousands of years. Well, why has it been known like that? Because it does have an effect on people. So he was born with the sun square Mars, which he shares with a couple of people that I could find. One of them was Robert De Niro. Another one was Hugh Grant. Another one was Fyodor Dostoevsky. And I was thinking, why is Dostoevsky, was he ever in anything violent? No, but he wrote about murder and violence. He had a really crummy life. He was arrested by, in a pogrom in the 1850s or something. He was sent to Siberia. He almost died, you know, and his never got over it. And the rest of his life, he wrote about that kind of stuff. Crime and Punishment, The Brothers Karamazov, The Idiot, you know, lots of really heavy-duty titles, you know, and he was able to express it. Now, this guy today, who died in the shootout, he wasn't any kind of writer. His energy was very limited to being, you know, very full of himself and very angry, a very angry young man, and a real a real jerk, you know, really, as far as I'm concerned. But he has this, he was born during a full moon. The sun and the moon were exactly opposite each other in the heavens. And then he also had, from Scorpio to Taurus, and then he had Mars exactly halfway between the sun and the moon. And that is a very unusual pattern. As a matter of fact, it only comes up in about maybe 15 out of 10,000 people that have that particular pattern.
Wow.
So it's quite rare. And
are you suggesting that if the feds compiled the birth date and time and location of every newborn as people are born in the country, that they could pull up their astrology charts and add this to the pre-crime data?
They would have to have it. Well, you know, I have every faith that they would be able to do that, right? The feds would, if they can listen in on zillions of conversations, you know, and emails and stuff, they can also, you know, compile big data banks of astrology.
Fine-tuned is this? Could they predict a time and place?
There are transits that there's the natal chart. The natal chart will show general basic tendencies, you know, for things like anger, uncontrolled violence, etc. And just the fact that this guy is going to be a problem to society in one way or another, you can be refined. He was also born with Venus in a very tight conjunction with Pluto. And Venus is the planet of love. But if you're born with Pluto right there with Venus, what it does is it corrupts the Venus. It corrupts the gentle part of the nature. It causes very early, probably sexualization or bad things happening. His first love affairs. The life in the family must have been terrible. At some point, I think this man lost his mother. You know, he was living with his dad.
I don't know if he's living.
His brother.
You know, they're saying now that he frequented that club, that he had a gay dating app on his phone. That now either he was doing this to track his prey, or you know, they're suggesting now he actually was gay himself. And
maybe
from what I understand,
could that be?
Maybe, yeah. But some people they've been, but some people go that way because they've been molested in childhood, you know, by.
Well, here's the thing. His first wife complained that he beat her or abused her in various ways and constant verbal abuse. So that's not love, is it? That's like he's using this woman, and maybe he used all women as a kind of a whipping boy, you know, I mean, kind of like thrashing them and stuff and putting them down and stuff. But then what he really wanted out of life was male attention. He wanted to be with guys. He was a guy's guy, you know. So and why the Venus with Pluto is important is that Pluto can corrupt Venus so badly that it could go both ways. It could go, it could be bisexual. And definitely there could be some extremely intense sexual encounters with that Venus Pluto, and it takes place in Scorpio. Pardon me, it takes place in the sign of Scorpio, which is the most intense of the signs. So he was almost channeled into this direction by his astrology chart.
Does his chart leave any room for not committing these? Not going this way?
I don't know, because let me give you another example. He has Mercury, which is a planet of communication, also in Scorpio. We don't know what house it is because you don't know exactly what time he was born. But in Scorpio, Mercury typically means that a person is very close to the vest. He does not, he does not tell people what he's really thinking. He'll make up stories and stuff, like a big shot or something, he has probably very few friends that he can actually talk to about important things, you know. That's just one of the things. No, but the overriding thing. Pardon?
He did tell his current wife, what he was up to.
Yeah, well, maybe he can, I guess for some reason he confided in her. Absolutely, yeah. But the thing I've personally seen this before, is that people that are born on the day of the full moon are a little bit off balance, because what happens is the sun is the vital center of the person's being, but the moon is their emotions and their feeling, their capacity for feeling. The sun could be the father. The moon could be the mother in the kid's life. But if he was born with them in a full moon, they are at opposite ends of the earth. They're opposite each other. That's what constitutes the full moon. And the full moon makes a person really kind of liable to take big plunges into emotional devastation and anger and stuff like that. You know, they don't know whether to identify with the male or the female side, because the sun is male and the moon is female, according to ancient astrology, which has been still believed in for 3,000 and more years. That's what it is. So he had that. Then he had Mars, the planet of anger, the red planet Mars, exactly halfway poised between the moon on one side and the Mars on the other. And that's what really made him a violent felon, a person who was just a loose cannon, liable to go off at any time. Now listen, if society had astrology anywhere where they took any notice of it at all, then this company, the companies that he worked for, the security company, the government agency, whatever, they would have seen pretty quickly that this guy was unstable. He needed to be watched. He did not necessarily need to have a gun permit. This is not a good guy to have a security guy with multiple gun permits.
Yeah, but you need something besides psychics and astrology. I always say
something between,
because it's so hard for a non-astrologer or non-psychic to prove it. It's so hard. So you could steer the research into the right direction, but they would need something else to back them up to stop
sure.
it.
Sure, and what
like,
it would, where it would have been is when he blabbed things about the Islamic State or that he was a jihadi or something like that.
Yeah.
Then they would have combined that. They would have taken his statements, combined them with the astrological data, the forensic stuff there, and they say, okay, I think this guy should not be in this position. We should make sure.
Yeah.
Now, I'm the last one. I'm the last one to go against the Second Amendment. Suzanne, I'm the last person to go against the Second Amendment. But if I saw this guy's chart, I would sure feel very uncomfortable with him having a gun. He had some kind of silver-plated gun.
Yeah, then they could dig deeper.
Long gun.
They could have dug deeper. They would have found, I guess it's, I just was Googling up to see if his mother is still alive, and she is. And they all have, that whole family has violence in its history. She was arrested in 2002 for beating up his father.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Well, he probably deserved it.
Well,
what a family to go with him then. Could you imagine how many people have families where the mother beats up the father, and the father wants to be the president of Afghanistan or something? How many kids could grow up in that kind of environment and have a normal life?
So that woman, she's just been a beaten dog her whole life.
Yeah.
She left Afghanistan, but she brought him with her. What?
Suzanne, let me put in one thing. And that is that so far I've just been talking about his natal chart. That's his birth chart. But then if I look at his progressions or his transits, which are where the planets are now, or where they have been, then I would see things like, the sun in his chart was slowly going over the last, 29 years towards, 25 of those 29 years, towards planet Uranus and Neptune in his chart. And Uranus is a very chaotic, anarchistic, explosive planet astrologically. It causes all kinds of accidents and all kinds of crap to take place. Well, anyway, when he was 25 or 26 was when the sun contacted that planet, went right over that planet in his progress chart. And that to me signifies that that's a time where he must have really started to go wrong, where he went in a very violent direction.
So how long
I would say 3 to 4 years ago. 3 to 4 years ago is when the energy really started taking hold. Now it was going towards Neptune, and Neptune, which is beyond the planet Uranus in his chart, that's a planet more of idealism, of kind of great ideas, but also things that are very hard to have happen in real life. It's fantasies. His whole thing about ISIS and all that, or himself as some kind of hero or whatever, that was all a fantasy. So I could see that. You can take this person and say, the natal chart looks pretty bad, but look at this. When he's between 25 and 30 years old, all this bad stuff happens, and that's when you really got to keep an eye on this guy, see?
It could have been helpful possibly as an alarm bell, and then they could have been digging up some more actual evidence on him to get on him, so he couldn't have done this. Now, I have my theories about, you know, the gun controls and stuff like that. I think there's more to this story that it might take years to unfold, because I think he had inside help. But I, you know, because they hadn't even recovered all the bodies when the leftists were getting out there talking about gun control, gun control, gun control. Well, I think there's a reason why all the attacks since Boston have been with guns. These people, I mean, nobody's talking about pressure cooker control, you know, laws to ban pressure cookers. He, you know, if he was really that dead set on committing this crime, he could have used the bomb and killed everybody at once. But no, he was taking glee and shooting one after the other. And I wonder if somebody taught him that glee at the individual killing, you know, or that's what went on in Paris. And Trump makes it, he does an assumption. Step over here, boom, step over here, boom, where they take glee in individual killings. And that's pretty sick, you know, but if you're actually in ISIS, they'll put everybody in a cage together and drown them all at once or burn them all at once. Or they'll have, you know, 27, quote-unquote, infidels lined up with 27 hatchet men. They'll behead them all at once, you know, rather than letting the one guy have all the glee of beheading one and the other. You know, I don't mean to be so morbid, but I have my suspicions. Guess why each of these has been so...
Now, the two guys, the two young guys in Boston used a pressure cooker, right? And then bombs. Yeah, and this guy used
they were the
guns.
Ones that used the bombs in Boston, but none of them since then have been with bombs. And
I agree there's more here than meets the eye. Did you notice yesterday they said that this guy, Omar, had taken two trips to Saudi Arabia for years, and then they said, the ambassador whatever explained, that was for the Hajj. That's the Hajj that they take once in their life. Well, you know what?
He wanted to do his Hajj before he died.
Why did he have to? No, but what I noticed was, why did he have to go twice? You go once to the Hajj. So what was the other trip to Saudi Arabia, you see?
He took two trips
to Saudi Arabia, yeah. But the ambassador, whoever, said very officially that, he had been on the Hajj. Well, I don't know why you'd want to go twice, you know. I've never heard anybody going twice, maybe consecutive years. So maybe he was meeting with somebody there. Maybe he was getting some training, some additional training, or some pep talk, you know, from one of these nutcases, you know, that live over there.
Wow.
Sad but true. Well, can I call back some other time and maybe we can talk some more astrology, because I really enjoy it. And I've been doing it so long that all I have to do is glance at one of these charts and I can see, is this really the guy or not? I mean, when I look at this guy's chart, I say, yep, he did it. I mean, he must have been there. And somebody else, I could say, well, that doesn't look like he was involved at all, you know. And if there's another big crime or massacre or something, I hope not. We can look at that. I also look at presidential candidates. I've looked at Donald Trump's chart, you know. I've looked at Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Haven't done the Democrats too much yet. I don't know why. I'm going to have to do some Democrats.
Yeah, now that we're pretty sure it's going to be Hillary, you know.
I would also like to do a comparison just to see how Hillary Clinton fits in with Bill Clinton. You know, I mean, they've been a team for like 40 years or something, a team in crime, some would say, you know, and see how they put together.
Like Bonnie and Clyde. And
how is it that these two are going to be tearing at each other's throats? You know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Well, Donald Trump has a magnificent, powerful chart. He has a sun in Mars in evidence, but he has Mars on the ascendant, which means it gives him the masculine strength of Mars, and it's in a good aspect to the sun. In other words, instead of a bad aspect like Omar has, which let's say a square or an opposition is what they call a bad aspect or there's different words for it, harmful, malefic aspect. Donald Trump has a good aspect, the 60-degree aspect, very close between Sun and Mars, as I recall. And that's very positive. What that means is he's using that Mars energy, the male, masculine, work, primal energy in a good way, somehow in a good way. And, of course, but Mars is also very self-assertive and kind of sometimes full of itself. So he will rub a lot of people the wrong way as he asserts himself, you know, and makes comments and stuff, you know. But I think when I look at him, I see a heart of gold. I see not a bad person
That's
at all, really. You know,
if he gets elected, would be all right.
It seems that way. It seems that way. Now, when I was looking at Ted Cruz's chart, it was totally different. He had some real crappy stuff on his chart there. And when I looked at Marco Rubio's chart, I said, well, this guy is never going to be president. He has these dreams. He has these outrageous kind of fantasies, but he's not going to be president of the United States. And also with Rubio's chart, I got some weird, not weird, but kind of some unconventional stuff there that I thought, well, he's not going to get too far, you know. So I was not surprised that both Rubio and Cruz ended up getting left behind, you know, and that Trump was masterful. Yeah.
I'd like to, we have a new caller I'd like to let join us here. So either you can hang on or I can let you go for now.
I'll listen to you off the air. Thanks. Okay.
Okay.
Nice to chat. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Oh.
Hi,
you're on the air.
He's gone.
You wanted to talk to him? Get him to call back in. Let me send him a chat and get him to get back on.
great astrology. I was also just going to say, you know, this is the kind of level of astrology that's interesting to me.
This guy is really good.
But I have a question, a specific one for him.
Okay, so I'll call back in. He's called back in here. I got him. Hi, I believe you're both on the air.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm back. Hi.
Hi. And you're still here,
hello,
ma'am?
Yeah, I am.
Hi, what's up?
So I don't know your name. I know Ed's name. I don't know your name.
Oh, it don't matter. My name don't matter. So this is a question.
That's okay. Some of my best clients are anonymous. So.
That's right. there's so many of us. It's really great. It's a great, great time to be alive from a certain perspective. Anyway, do you find that the planets of Mercury and Venus are either conjunct or very close together in one of the interesting house, but mostly either conjunct or very close together? Do you find that makes for a beautiful singing voice or speaking voice?
Well, I would say if they're in Gemini, let's say it depends on what house they're in, on what time they're in. If it's in Taurus
or in
Libra.
What if it's been heaven in Aquarius?
Oh, in Aquarius. Well, let's see. I think probably both. Probably the Mercury would be stronger in Aquarius because it's more of a mental sign than the singing voice sign in of the arts. But you see, the arts, which would include, you know, dancing and singing and playing instruments and writing poetry. I don't know, all that kind of stuff, all that romantic musical stuff and art and everything, that all comes through Venus. But then writing and communications and writing novels or talking on the phone or anything with communication, that's Mercury. So here's what I find. I find that the people that are very strong in the arts and in communication and can actually become famous for what they do in the arts are the ones who are born with Mercury and Venus in a conjunction. You know, you have those really close, like you said, really close, like 1 degree, 2 degrees.
Yeah, and I said, or conjunct.
Yeah.
You know, but here's the way, I'm familiar with all those other options, but the way this was explained to me, and it just stuck with me from when I was very first with one of my teachers in astrology, was that the Mercury was communicator. Like if you looked at Mercury right. as communicator, and Venus mm-hmm. with beauty, you know.
Oh sure.
And then there's I forget, you know, so I couldn't tell you the next part, but there was something else that you told me that had to do with what we consider to be myth, you know, or mythical, somebody like mm-hmm. that, which was to the voice.
Well, I'll tell you, the myth comes through in the fact that the Roman god Mercury, I forget for the moment the Greek name for him, but anyway, he was the god of communication. He had the two little wings on his cap and wings on his ankles, and he would fly around supposedly. You know, and he was the messenger of the gods, and that goes back to Mercury, the planet, actually being the fastest moving planet as it zips around the sun. You know, in the solar system, they're related. Now, Venus has always been thought to be the beautiful Aphrodite. Was the Greek name for her, you know, rising from the sea, very beautiful, the goddess of love, and she was lovers with Mars and lovers with Mercury, and she had a little baby called Cupid, that was her child, you know, who's the little god of love, also known as Eros, yes.
Oh, never mind, I was going to say, our caller dropped, and she has called back in, but if you don't mind, I'm overdue on taking a break.
Oh,
and
sure.
So if you don't mind holding, I'll take a break. And,
yeah, sure.
Okay. So
glad to.
Give me one second here.
will you be able to tell her that too? You'll be able to tell her
yeah,
that too.
Yeah, I will.
Taking a break.
I can hear you. Cool. I can hear you.
Okay.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk?
Hi,
that's exactly what my Serenity
air?
Rug has
did
done for
really
me.
Do that
this revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a foot rest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles
the
feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Hi, so I'm back, and we're talking about pre-crime and the forensic data gathering and behavior observation that the scientists and the investigation bureaus are putting together and databases on people and how predicting who's behaving in such a way that they might commit a crime, eye aversion things and gesturing and cultural things, you know, that can detect somebody in airports. And I have quite a few articles linked up from madscientist.exposed, the website, but even without this pre-crime determination, we had information. It's come out today that the FBI had quite a bit of information that this guy was planning something like this. And even his wife knew, and she actually drove him there to scope out a couple places. And now it's not just the Pulse Gay Club. It was also Disney World in Florida that he scoped out. And, this information was out there. They had connections. They knew that his mosque was teaching some of this stuff. You know, his father was well known. His father's been pro-Taliban for years and years. You know, he even had a TV show, and he even ran for president of Afghanistan at one point, espousing, the Taliban Sharia law kind of thing. And all of these people, they could have been rounding him up and keeping a close eye on him. As soon as they made a move to buy a gun, you know, they could have stepped in to stop this. So there's all kinds of stuff that hasn't come out yet. There are some of the survivors who are talking about that the exit doors were blocked or they were being barricaded by human beings. Like, you know, I was hearing from one source that as people tried to shove through the doors, there was somebody on the other side of the door shoving back and keeping them in, and there was that give and take in the door. But by the time it made the mainstream media, oh, that door was chained. Well, it's very hard to chain a door from the outside. It doesn't have any handles. So I would love to see close-up photographs of those exit doors to see what the possibility is. So anyway, now we're finding out that the Hillary State Department knew well what this mosque was teaching, and that they actually scrubbed it, forced the detectives to delete their data. And I've got a link to that article, a couple articles that Robert Daly and InfoWars. And I've just been fascinated that my friend, psychic astrologer, is able to take a look at somebody's chart. And, you know, you can't, out of 300 million people in the country, you can't know in advance who's, you know, you can't possibly do charts on all of them unless you were to automate astrology somehow. But, you know, you can pull up a chart, but it takes the artist who knows how to read the chart as to what the likelihoods are. And you know, he pulls up this chart. He says it's very easy to see that this guy had a horrible childhood and, you know, all the violence that was involved and whatever. And it's just been fascinating. So I've got a link to his article, too. And I don't know. Are you still there, both of you?
I am.
Ed? You're over there. So we can go over some more of these articles if you like. One is, there's another one. The Washington Post had an article just this past December. And inside the mind of, that's the Oslo murder. I already looked at that one. Then there's one just this past March that China is developing it says China is building a big data platform for pre-crime, quote-unquote. Using online profile and movements, government aims to catch, quote-unquote, terrorists in advance. It's pre-crime meets thought crime. I don't know.
I wonder how they're doing that.
Yeah, because, you know, the Chinese and the Indians are very much into astrology, aren't they? You know, every Chinese restaurant you go into, you get a chart.
India has... Suzanne, India has 10 times more astrologers than America does. I mean, they have astrologers on every street corner in India, you know? They really believe in it.
That's about 10 times population, too.
Actually,
10 times of it. It says, China is using its substantial surveillance apparatus as a basis for the, quote, unified information environment, unquote, that will allow authorities to profile individual citizens based upon their online behaviors, financial transactions, where they go, and who they see. the authorities are watching for deviations from the norm that might indicate someone is involved in suspicious activity, and they're doing it with a hand from technology pioneered in the U.S. Well, that figures, doesn't it? But, you know, but the Chinese, they don't have any qualms about stepping all over human rights, because I mean, they don't have a constitution like we do. You know, I don't know. You know, they'll pick somebody, you know, non-criminal. They'll pick people right off. You know, you go into a Christian church that's not approved by our patriotic, you know, branch of churches, and so we're going to put you in jail. And they do. You know, it's horrible. As Defense One Patrick Tucker reports, the Chinese government is leveraging predictive policing. Defense One. That's a website I haven't heard of before. Capabilities that have been used. It's pretty scary.
Suzanne, while I'm on here, I think people would, anybody listening might be interested in a book that I've done. It's called Planetary Combinations in Astrology Charts. It's 420 pages long. It's available on Amazon. It's a Kindle.
I have a link to your site. Yes.
Yeah.
I have
a link to your site,
so you can put a link from your site. But our friend was speaking up too here.
Sure, but I was just saying, I think that's interesting for her too, because I'm very aware. She said she was talking about Aquarius, about Mercury and Venus in Aquarius, and that would be a person who's very, their love nature and their way of expression would be very innovative, very modern, very unusual, something non-traditional. They're very non-traditional. They do things in a new way. So that's very interesting. I remember that was something that she said. What happens when you have Venus and Mercury in Aquarius. And that definitely has a meaning. It has a meaning.
Venus and Mercury can jump. What was I saying now? I forgot. What were you saying just before this?
Just predicting crime, you can predict other talents maybe and steer those children into the right schools for those talents, you know, the dance schools and the gymnastics schools and the artist schools and the music schools. You might be able to do that. And, you know, certainly the Soviet Union used to do that and China does that.
Sure. Olympians. Yes. I was going to ask you, I can't remember your name. Either one of you.
Ed August. It's like the month of August with an S on the end. August. I should get one of these shows myself.
So when not you, but when the host of the show was saying the thing about Hillary, okay, and what's going on with that, what's your name again, sir? Remember knowing that? Like you were able, as well as how you, when I tuned into the show tonight, because we've studied heat a long time now, when you look at their chart, and, you know, it's all level with everybody else, you know?
One of the ways that I use astrology, people often come to me for seeing how they get along with people. You know, like I can compare any two people for compatibility. That's very important to see if you're going to be working with someone who's going to be a good friend or who's going to be an enemy who's going to knock the sweat out from under you. You know, you can tell that with astrology.
Yeah, or somebody who had really early childhood trauma, you know. Perhaps sexual.
That's
you can tell that stuff. You can tell that. And then there they are.
To some extent, yeah. I think people getting to know people, everything that you can use to obtain valuable information that will help you, and that comes, you can identify somebody as a friend or not, you know. I mean, that works in every realm, in politics, you know, in business, and in love life, you know. How do you know? You find somebody, you meet somebody, how do you know they're going to be good for you? How do you know you want to have children with somebody or not, you know? So, yeah, I definitely would use astrology for that. I wish good luck to the Chinese, but I don't know how they're going to use that, some kind of bio data or some kind of biology or something, mental tests. I mean, I don't know how the Chinese are planning to do that.
Yeah, I had a thought earlier, and that was, you know, we way back, I don't know, what is it, the 50s and 60s and 70s, we had the CIA and the MK Ultra stuff and the mind test and the test in remote viewing and all this. It's not like our government dismisses psychic type stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like they want it all to themselves. They don't want us to believe in it, so they'll put out stories poo-pooing it and all that. But they are acknowledging another dimension besides just the physical. And I think they probably could use astrological data in this pre-crime stuff. Certainly, I'm sure they've classified all their methodology. So whether they use it or not, we'll never know. They have all this other gestural stuff, if you have somebody with maybe an eye condition and they're blinking too often, then they could misdiagnose somebody or arrest somebody that has nothing, no malintent. But you could cross-reference this astrology stuff with the biometric stuff and the psychic stuff, because I think, some of what you do, Ed, I think some of it's astrology and some of it's pure psychic. You're operating on a realm that, and you can draw it up at will, whereas some of my family members, it just kind of happens randomly, driving past a building and, oh my God, something terrible is going to happen here, and then it does, Thank God it doesn't happen that often, but you have more control of it than most of the public, and it's, I'm sure that's because they're putting out these disinformation stories, that don't trust it, because they want it all to themselves,
I've been exposed to the world of the occult in many different ways, including ghost experiences. When I was very young, I was at the center of a poltergeist experience in California. And there was all kinds of precognition and, dreaming about people that died and then they came back to school on Monday and they had died over the weekend, crazy things like that. And I have about 30 other things like that. I put them together in a little book called Strangest Adventures of Ed August. And that has not been published yet, but
I hope you have a link on your website.
It's about
you have a link on your site, right?
Pages. If you go to, I talk about some of these at edaugust.com. That's Ed August, just like the month of August with an S on the end, .com. And I also have an edaugustbooks.com, which has a kind of used and rare books. But some of my own books are on there, too, and I'll have more on there. And
We lost our friend again.
What was that background noise? Did you hear that background noise?
I did. And
I think it's her line. She took it with her. It's clear now.
Did you notice?
You notice? Right now there's not the noise. Well, maybe she won't call back.
I think we got boring there. I'll let you have something else to say. We'll see how the recording comes out, because this is downloadable after the fact. So, if it doesn't fit your schedule, you can up the podcast and play it back.
I love talking with you, and I love the subjects that you bring up. And if I can do anything with the astrology stuff that'll fit in with some of the characters in the news, or some of the news stories. And human nature is so unusual, I think astrology can really help with it, let's do that.
We should line up all the scientists that are involved in the vaccine industry and the GMO industry and all this stuff and do charts on all of them, but there's probably far too many for one,
I had a guy who was an atheist from Oxford, England, and he challenged me, and said that I was full of it and everything, and it was ridiculous. And then what I did is I asked him for his date of birth, and he honestly gave me his date of birth. I said, well, this is obviously you, because look, your sun is exactly opposite my Mercury, your Mars is exactly on my Saturn. These are all, I gave him quotes on how this means that we're like enemies at sight. We would be like natural born enemies. And here he is attacking my astrology online and trying to make me feel like an idiot. And here I am attacking him. And I said, what you're doing, what we're doing is we're proving astrology. We are proving that astrology works because our charts are exactly backed up by reality and what we did. And that freaked him out. And he dropped off of the service and everything. And he came back months later. He said, dang, I didn't have an answer for that guy. And this is some Oxford guy, some Oxford guy.
Oh, really?
So it made me feel pretty good that I was, and an atheist on top of it, So I got him thinking about astrology anyway.
I don't think you have to be a believer in God in order to follow astrology, but maybe you do because, I mean, it's all God's plot, you know? I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. I feel kind of bad for atheists and people who don't believe in a dimension outside the physical, because obviously people like you can see into that dimension, and the rest of us have various degrees of blindness, and they want to impose their blindness on you by calling it, you know, hokum, and that's not to say there aren't people out there that are frauds. There are, but then there are people that aren't, and it is hard to sort them out, and it's just by your track record, you know, we can sort them out. So, you know, if you have somebody you can trust on small stuff, then when the big stuff comes, then you can figure it out. And you know, I think they know this in these pre-crime places that do all this pre-crime science database stuff. Were you saying something?
Well, I was just going to say there are no atheists in foxholes. And in the experience of life, sooner or later, we all feel like we're in a foxhole with incoming, you know, that we got to worry about and stuff. So sooner or later, nobody can stay in that condition of blithe, you know, thinking that they're God or that they're as good as anybody else or whatever, or that they don't have to abide by spiritual laws. You know, it comes crashing down on them.
Like good and evil and honest and lying.
Absolutely. Good and evil.
Those things really
good
mean
and evil.
Something. You know, if people don't believe in a higher, they do try to get away with some stuff. Some of them. I mean, it takes a level of arrogance to think you're better than somebody else and that you can lie to them. You know, but there are some people who maybe they are blind to the upper dimensions, but they'll believe that something like honesty should exist.
Yeah, and then there's people that believe in the occult and Satanism and in other exotic, you know, beliefs like that are criminal minds. And I'm afraid that some of them have gotten into politics. I've heard terrible rumors that some of our politicians, you know, are witches and stuff like that. You know, I can think of one.
Oh, I heard that on InfoWars.
I don't want to.
One of the Larry Nichols interviews.
I don't want to say it, but I heard it.
Well, it's already out there. It's already out there on InfoWars. Hillary Clinton is a practicing witch, and you can find that interview on InfoWars. And so she obviously believes in some kind of dimension, but she's using it in a cold way, in an evil way. You know, she's trying to control the world. She thinks nothing can happen to her. She's made some kind of deal with some kind of entity that she believes that she's not going to be arrested for some crime she's committed.
Let me tell you, the witchcraft and Satanism stuff have a limited guarantee. You know, they have a limited time warranty. You know, it might work for somebody for 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, but at some point there's going to be a point of reckoning. They never get the ultimate reward of what they're looking for. They never do. That's why there's no one triumphant evil force that takes over the whole world. You know, they're always kept in check. They're always brought back down again by either the power of good or by God or by the fact that they're too crazed with their own power, and therefore there's a downfall, you know. They fall down.
Remember
on the face
back?
Of
a was it a little over a year ago? We went to the book festival at the U of A down in Tucson, University of Arizona, and we heard Alan Lightman speak, and he's written a bunch of physics books. My daughter's a big fan of his, physics and cosmology and the nature of the universe and all this stuff. And I on my other blog, maybe I'll put a link over to that too, where they had a question and answer session, and he was speaking about his book, not the Unexpected Universe, he was talking about how it was paining him to watch his daughter age and start to get wrinkles and stuff like that, and he didn't understand the purpose of death. So he didn't understand, you know, why, you know, a world so full of life, why things get old and die, and he didn't understand why the universe was like that. And he had been talking about this dark matter.
Dark matter.
Well, it's not like the universe is limited in space, you know. But, you know, he was talking about that they had been discovering this dark energy that was actually accelerating the expansion of the universe. So it didn't all just start with the Big Bang, that there's actually something with its foot on the gas pedal, but it's only at the exact acceleration rate that allows life, and it allows, what's the other thing it allows? There's just a narrow range where things can live there. And he says, and I don't understand the reason for the aging and the death. And there was a question and answer. And so I asked him, and I was like, I stunned him because the whole audience was, And I asked him, well, could it be that the purpose of that dark energy at that exact pace of expansion that you talk about, and that the reason for aging and death is simply to put a limit on evil.
Everybody
can commit evil till you die, and nobody can commit more evil to you once you die. So these people, I mean, as horrible as this thing is in Orlando, these people are protected for all eternity from any more evil happening to them. You know, I believe that they've, gone to their loving maker, and, you know, they're reckoning whatever small little sins they might have had in their life, whereas this guy, Omar, what's his name? He's got a lot to answer for, and it's really horrible on that side. And God has to weigh all that versus the brutal childhood he lived through, and only God can sort that out. You know, but God has the ability to look into the future, and that our scientists are pretending to have or trying to have with their pre-crime research, but there's got to be a way to stop crime without inflicting punishment, because if somebody hasn't committed a crime, we have no right to inflict punishment on them. So I should put a link to that because I was pretty proud of that. I stumped a world-renowned cosmologist on the purpose of dark energy.
I was there. I was there. And when you got up and you brought up the question of morality, ethics, good and evil, in front of a cosmologist who's like basically dealing with particle physics the Big Bang, creation of the universe, everybody was shocked. It was just so different. It was
he brought it up first. He said that physics has reached the point, cosmology has reached the point where there are only two leaps of faith that you can take. One is either to talk about multiverses where you don't acknowledge a beginning, and that's so that you never have to discuss God. But or you believe in God that had a beginning, or that created the beginning. So either one of those positions is a leap of faith, and that's how far astrophysics has come and cosmology has come. Yes, we're doing all this extra research now with CERN and stuff, and they're trying to recreate a small Big Bang, and they're trying to recreate a microscopic black hole, and they're messing with the Earth's magnetic field, which is in turn affecting the sun's magnetic field, and it was all that ricochet stuff that I blogged about on the site. But either one of those is a leap of faith. You either have to believe there is no God or there is.
That's true, but that was Enlightenment who brought up that stuff about CERN, was it? They weren't talking about CERN.
I'm relating it to what's going on, because they are trying to, we've kind of reached the end of physics other than trying to redo it ourselves, and if we can be God by making a small Big Bang or a small black hole, then that's all. Either God is God or we are God, And they're taking a very scary course, because they're involving the rest of us, with their ricocheting their magnetic fields off the sun and coming back and hitting us, and with the solar wind hitting the atmosphere, causing the balloon squeezing thing and the earthquakes. They're involving the rest of us. So I should put another link to BP Earthwatch, where we see a lot of this stuff. He explains a lot of this stuff on. It's a YouTube channel, BP Earthwatch, where he looks at several outlets of scientific data, the CERN output data, USGS earthquake data, Weather Service data, satellite data, looking both at the Earth and at the Sun and at the various planets, and he connects them all together, and he's cause and effect, and he can predict earthquakes. He's done it. He's predicted earthquakes by when CERN causes a coronal mass ejection from the Sun. If that is aimed just right, you know. So it's just kind of funny. I need to take another break. If you can hold on for another minute,
absolutely,
or a couple of minutes.
Sure.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Yo, Drake drops the verse.
I like the way you grow it. No pesticides. I got to box it up.
Box it up, yeah.
I like the way you grow it. So locally. Gotta box it up. I like the way you grow it with no GMOs. I like the way you twerk it. No doubt.
We've got squash and peas, calling it a pack for all your bees. Melons you wanna squeeze. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Search YouTube for Freaks of the Garden, peacefulbelly.com. Support your local organic farmers.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
So I'm back, and we've been discussing pre-crime and some of the science going on behind it, or articles about the science. They don't tell us a whole lot about it because I'm sure all of that stuff is classified, how they observe people's behavior to try to predict a crime. And certainly they do airport observations, your body language, your eye contact type of thing, and they take into account cultural differences. Hopefully they do, trying to predict crime. And that's kind of in the near future. They could do more to predict stuff in the a little bit more distant future. Like they had information on this guy in Orlando for years. They interviewed him in 2013, 2014, and now it's come out that, the Hillary State Department scrubbed his investigation and anything connected with that mosque that he was attending because it was not PC. You know, they wanted to be friends with the people at this. And, you know, unless you tell, you know, these people in these communities, you need to be turning in these people, they don't. The guy's own wife knew he was going to do this. She actually drove him by the or to the Pulse nightclub to scope this out. She knew he was scoping out Disney World. Disney World knew he was scoping them out, and they reported him to the FBI. So how much free crime are they really interested in developing or using if they have direct intelligence that they're not using? So you know, we had a caller who's been discussing with us. Also, there are some other realms that we can use to help steer, you know, pre-crime investigations. You know, there are, you know, he's been very successful in his life with both using psychic abilities and astrology, which I'm always a little bit queasy with that. So I would want to, if we can, like, steer somebody toward how to find the physical evidence as to how to get him, you know, his phone conversations, you know, if you can say this guy's chart looks really, really dangerous, you know, based on his planetary alignments, and then you know who to look into and actually gather the data. And, you know, a lot of these shows on cable, there's psychic detectives that my own mom loves to watch, these psychic detectives, and they're after the fact, but they help in a way such that they help steer the police toward finding the right area to investigate so that they can find their guy or woman. And they might not have found that first clue if they weren't kind of steered in the right direction by the psychic. And that seems to be the story in time after time on these investigations. Now, I'm sure there are some that don't pan out. Or I remember seeing one of these episodes. It took, I don't know, over 10 years for it to pan out, and we don't really know why. You know, or if there is some higher power, you know, really higher power like God steering these visions that these people have. And, you know, for several years there was that television show, The Medium, that was based on a true case, a true woman who was actually helping the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department solve murders. And she would get these visions, and that would help them find their evidence, and they would get the guy. But, you know, you can tell when writers are tired of writing for a show, or when the sponsors want to move on to something else, or the producers, they just want to move on to something else because they start writing bad scripts. I noticed that even way back in the 80s, I used to watch, Blue Moon or Moonlighting. The thing was with Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd. They started writing bad scripts and actually abusing the audience, and the medium was doing that too. They started having the bad guy win more often than the good guy, and that I consider that abusing the audience because you don't get that satisfaction of solving the crime, wrapping it up, good wins over evil, and all that. You just don't get that. And so, you know, anyway, so I don't think there's anything wrong with using psychics to solve things or to steer the authorities in the direction of finding the right physical evidence to get the guy, because I do have problems with arresting people for thought crimes before they've actually committed a crime. You know, what there's got to be some level of privacy, but, you know, what's in your own head. And I know they're even talking about putting chips in your brain so they can read your thoughts, and or maybe they don't even need the chips anymore, you know. So it does become a tinfoil hat world at that point, you know, and there are beautiful hats on Etsy. I think I mentioned it last week, and I don't think I put the link. I should do that. There are some really beautiful tinfoil hats that out there to keep the snoopers out of your brain. So pre-crime might have its pros and cons. If you can stop somebody without actually punishing them, you know, stop somebody from committing a crime without putting them in jail, for a crime they haven't committed. That was the big question. That's the big ethical question that was in that movie, Minority Report. And, that is my issue with pre-crime stuff. But it is, like, on the edge of science. And what does science really know? And can they look at your, you know, shine some kind of a a camera at your head and read your thoughts and project them onto a screen behind you and all that. And maybe the thing is to learn to think in another language, so I need to start learning some obscure language. I don't know. So, yeah, there's so I have a bunch of links to a bunch of these articles out there. You know, that China is building a big data platform for pre-crime, but we also have links to how much the FBI really did know and the State Department really did know before this guy committed, and they knew it long before he committed these crimes, these murders, false. So, anyway, let me see. I think I've probably done enough reading. Oh, one last thing. The BigThink.com has one last article here that was just put out today. The worst mass shooting in U.S. history was not actually Orlando. And they have the horrific massacre of innocents in Orlando nightclub is a tragedy of national and international proportions. The senseless, methodical killing of people just like us in a place where we've come to relax is an affront to our humanity and civilization. But it has been immediately dubbed the worst mass shooting in American history, but it's not really. It goes on that the worst mass shooting in American history was actually the Wounded Knee Massacre in South Dakota in 1890. 150 to 300 Native Americans were gunned down by the U.S. Army in South Dakota. And I've heard gun advocates cite this as a reason to not turn in our guns because the government can and does run amok. On December 29, 1890, a regiment of 500-plus American troops surrounded a group of Lakota on the Lakota Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota and ordered them to surrender their weapons. Then the article goes on. Once they did, they gunned them all down. And there are some pictures on this article. I've got a link to it. They did it in the dead of winter. These it's a very hard article to look at. They have photographs from the event. And I have to change my page here. I can't look at it. But I have a link if you want to look at it. And I'll put a warning on the link, too, so that people know to beware before you just jump onto that page. But the government does run amok. And the whole thing about surrendering your guns, I wrote to the Richie Allen Show as a European in England, and he discusses Brexit a lot. And he had a little short this morning where he took objection to things Alex Jones was saying about why does he complain about Obama's gun control reaction and you know, why does he go on about gun control? Doesn't he know the real thing is about suspending posse comitatus? And what he, because of their own nationalist movements over there in Europe, they're not making the connection that the reason that we don't have soldiers in our streets right now is because we're armed. That's why the Second Amendment. And so I wrote him, I think, too. I'll put a link to that, too. I was kind of, you know, just explaining to them, you know, looking at things from different perspective, you know, our side of the pond and their side of the pond, their national movements are very different from ours, but are related in the same way in that they're trying to topple an unelected elitist type of tyranny that's standing over them now called the EU, European Union, and, you know, passing laws in all these countries that were never voted on. These people were never voted on. These bureaucrats were never voted on, and these laws were never voted on. And so, so we always have to be vigilant against government tyranny, and that's where these mad scientists are coming in. Yes, pre-crime can be a good thing if we control the pre-crime method. And the same with all these other things that, you know, science, the vaccine science used to be good, but they have run amok now. And so it's time for me to go. And I would like to thank everyone for listening. And I'll talk to you next week.